This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Hey guys, if you know me, you know I love to travel and you know I love to save money. This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further, literally. They cover all things travel finance, like how to plan group trips that don't bust your budget or your friendships. How to maximize points for real savings, not just free bottled water. How to avoid paying for upgrades you won't use, and so much more. They're doing great work over there. Check it out. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast. The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Siegel. Thanks for listening. My guest today is Jennifer Johnson. Before we get to Jennifer, I'm going to have a few announcements. Our website is traveltalespodcast.com. You can go there and you can see photos of our guests. You can see links to their social media. You can see links to our social media. Our main social media is, of course, Instagram. Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. Please give us a follow there. Let's get those numbers up, shall we? We also have a Facebook page. You can follow us there, too. And if you listen to us on any streaming device, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever it is, please give us a good rating. That helps people find the show by boosting our presence, and that's a cool thing for you to do. I'd appreciate that. Cost you nothing, but it helps out. If you think you'd be right for the show, maybe you know somebody would be right for the show. Maybe you want to write me to ask me some travel questions, or maybe just tell me I'm awesome. You can write me at traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. That's traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. All right, my guest today is Jennifer Johnson of Jen and Scott Adventures. They are a married couple who have been living on the road pretty much since 2020. They're on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. Just go to jns.adventures and you'll see where in the world they are. I talked to Jen when she was in Thailand. Of the couple, she is the more out in front of the camera person. Scott is the behind the camera guy. So Jen did the interview, never got to meet Scott, but I'm sure he's a lovely gentleman. Because Jen sure was lovely, she was great. Really enjoyed my time talking to her. When she first reached out a month or so ago, they were living in Vietnam, so they're in the middle of an Asian swing right now. But for the last few years, they had been down in Central America and South America a whole bunch. Colombia, Brazil, Paraguay, Costa Rica, and on and on. And now they're in Asia. As I found out during this interview, the reason they created their YouTube channel and Instagram was to inspire others who've always talked about living around the world and didn't think it was possible that they could do it. Because Jen and Scott are sure doing it. And they're not youngsters. They're not like 20-something-year-old backpackers. Jen's 50. She admits it in this interview, which is refreshing as someone who's lived in Hollywood a long time, being honest with your age. They help fund this travel through Scott being a scuba instructor and Jen teaching English as a second language. And they do this around the world. So when they reached out to me about being on the show, and see, it works, everybody. TravelTalesPodcast@gmail.com. Just write me. She described her story, and I saw the YouTube channel, and I said, you know what? They would be good for this show. So it was great to meet Jen, and hopefully one day I'll meet Scott as well. Once again, you can find them at jns.adventures on YouTube and Instagram. And they're also on TikTok, too. So TikTok, too. I like that. Anyway, please enjoy my conversation with Jennifer Johnson. Jen with two N's. I love that. That's your handle here on the recording here. And so, I mean, it's important because I'm guessing everybody gets it wrong.
I think I was just a annoying teenager who had a very generic name. I think in my class, I had maybe four other Jennifers and I had to stand out some way. And so the two N's was the best way. I tried Jenny for a little while, but then Forrest Gump ruined that for me. So I went back to the Jen with the two N's.
Jen and Scott Adventurers. That's what it is.
Yes.
So how long have you guys been married?
Oh, 8 years.
8 years. Okay.
We're
and
both
when
on,
did...
we're both on marriage number two.
Oh, good for
hopefully,
you.
Hopefully the last one.
I haven't pulled the trigger on one yet. So you're saying two is the magic number.
It is. It is so far.
Okay. So you guys have been married for 8 years. When did you hatch this plan to pick up and go around the world? And where were you living at the time?
So we met outside of Austin, Texas. And so he's originally from Oregon. I'm originally from California. We both ended up in Texas separately. And so I got divorced. And after my divorce, I was like, I'm going to have a year of yes, where I'm just going to say yes to anything. If somebody invites me to Tulum, I'm going to Tulum. If somebody says, let's go to see my friend's comedy show, I went. So for a year, I said yes to everything. And that include going on a online date with this other divorcee named Scott. And we just kind of clicked really right away. And he was interested in traveling. I oddly was married to an air traffic controller that never wanted to get on a plane. So I didn't travel. Yeah, you can see why the divorce was a thing.
Yeah, well, that doesn't fill me full of confidence either. It's like, what does he know that we don't know?
So we started traveling fairly early. I think our thing was like, if we could travel together, then we can probably tackle the world together. So our first trip was to the Dominican Republic. Then we did Nicaragua. And in Nicaragua, we were on a small island and, we had rented a scooter. It took us 6 minutes to get around the island. There was nothing to do. And across from our hostel was a scuba dive shop. And they said, well, do you want to scuba dive? Like, we literally have nothing to do. Yes, let's go scuba diving. And absolutely fell in love with it. And so our next trip was to Indonesia. We were there for 3 weeks, just scuba diving everywhere. We didn't do the Bali. We went to Gili Ti and Manado, and we're just diving our little faces off. And as we got to know people internationally, we realized, oh, it's us as Americans that don't travel for extended periods of time. We met a couple from Australia. We're like, yeah, we work for 6 months. We travel for 6 months. We were running to like 19-year-olds from the Netherlands. They're like, yeah, I'm just traveling by myself. And so as we were talking to divers and as we were talking to people we met, we were like, oh, like we could make this a career. He could be a scuba dive instructor. We could travel the world. I could teach English as a second language. Like, we don't have to be tied to the United States. And then the pandemic hit and we were locked down for not long because Texas was wild, wild west. It was like,
yeah, I know,
not locking anything down. And so
I was
still
living
traveled.
In Santa Monica. I was living in Santa Monica at the time. And
oh,
that
so
was,
you were locked down.
That was locked down. And then, you know, yes, driving to Orange County even was like another world. And then I drove to Utah and there was no rules. It was like crazy.
Right. And that was Texas. Texas was like, we don't care. So we traveled during the pandemic. We went to Colombia and had an amazing time. We were scuba diving, discovered a town called Palenque I'd never heard of that was founded by freed slaves, and was like, oh, so beyond just the diving and meeting people, there's this other cultural, deep cultural aspect that was out there in the world that we had never thought about. And so the pandemic really turned that on for us. Like, we could live abroad. We don't have kids. There's really nothing tying us to home. And people do this. Like, people live abroad. We met a ton of people. And so the plan launched in 2020. Unfortunately, both of my parents had long-term illnesses. And so I said, well, wherever we go, I need to be close in case something happens to my parents and I need to get back. And sadly, they both passed away within a year of each other. My mom passed away in March 21 and my dad passed in January 22. Ooh. And so, yeah, it was a rough year. And so I was like, all right, there's really nothing tying me here. Like, I'm ready to go. And when I tell you, I think I told him this on a Tuesday. By Thursday, he had already booked plane tickets for us to Costa Rica. He'd booked an apartment. Like, he was just waiting for me to go. And so that's where we started our slow travel, was Costa Rica.
Wow. Well, what was your life before this? I know you were married before, but I mean, what was your work job? I mean, what were you, like, regular 9-to-5-er, or I mean, what did you do?
I regular 9-to-5-er, he regular 9-to-5-er. He was an electrician for 20 years. Oh. And I worked in recruiting for a good chunk of my career. So I started in higher education, and then I transferred to recruiting for tech companies. So I was recruiting college students for summer internship programs or for entry level to kind of build that pipeline of talent for engineering companies. And so I love that. I loved working with students, and I loved giving them the opportunity and kind of having them think about their careers early, because I didn't think about my career, you know, at all. And so to be that kind of conduit for students was great. And I was able to do it remotely during the pandemic, which was another great opportunity that I could be home and still do what I love. And then when we decided to move abroad, I told my employer, and they were like, ooh, even though you're working remotely, you've got to do it in the States. And I was like, well, I don't know if you thought that was going to stop me, but I guess I resign. I don't know.
There's remote and then there's remote. I mean, your idea of remote is different than my idea of remote.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. So where in California were you from?
Originally, I'm from a town called Riverside.
Oh, I know Riverside. Sure. I'm in LA. Oh, okay, I mean, I've lived in LA for 27 years, so. You're perfect. Out there. You're inland, in the Inland Empire.
Yes, the Inland Empire. Yeah, very popular on Cops for some reason. Yeah. But yes, from the IE.
Oh, that's funny. So marriages would brought you to Texas, I'm guessing.
Yes, my ex-husband was in the Navy in San Diego, and then he separated from the Navy and then worked as a controller in Austin.
Did you or your current husband have a like – childhoods where you traveled a lot, or was it just something like a dream?
It was a dream. He grew up in a very small town called Tillamook, which if you like their
I've
cheese,
heard of that.
He's very, yes, it's the cheese.
Tillamook cheese. That's, yeah. Okay.
Exactly. So it is in Oregon. It's a very small town in central Oregon. I think there's like 3,000 people that live there. So he came from this very small town where people were either loggers or dairy farmers. Like there's nothing really else going on in his town. I don't know where it came from. Most people don't really leave his town. And he just at a young age wanted to explore. And he had an opportunity to go to Australia when he was 18. And he said he just wasn't ready at the time and regretted it. And so when he turned 30, I think is when he started traveling internationally and kind of fell in love with it. For me, no, travel wasn't a part of my life. My parents divorced when I was 2. And so my dad lived in New York. My mom lived in California. So travel for me was just being on a plane going between the coast. So that was travel for me. I always thought it was something that rich people did. Right. Because, you know, I'm 50 and we didn't have the internet. We didn't have social media exposing us to different kinds of travel. We didn't know about budget travel back then or that you could travel solo. Like travel was just not in my purview at all. Until I met Scott, I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. You're interested in this stuff. It sounds cool. Let me try it. And then as we went to places, and discovered people and learned that it's more than just being at the resort, I really fell in love with it.
Was the idea like, did you guys have a budget in mind, or were you saying like, okay, it's only going to be hostels? I mean, did you do it that way? Or it's like, we're going to have to treat ourselves sometimes. I mean, how did you, is one like a little more bougie than the other?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
You see these fingernails?
Oh, I see
yes.
The nails. I see the nails.
I'm the bougie one. I'm the problem. So yes, he's a hunter who sleeps in his life. He has hunted in the past, so he can be in a tent covered in deer pee. So no, we live very very different lives. So we find a middle ground. I think it doesn't have to be 5-star, and we need our money to stretch far when we were traveling before. So we weren't staying. We were mostly staying in like Airbnbs because we wanted to be kind of with people. We didn't want to be with just the tourists. So we stayed away from hotels. We stayed away from resorts. We tried to, as much as we could, find places where we would be near and of locals, because that's where you get the more rich experience, is being in the community. So that's what we tried to do when we traveled before. Once we decided to move when we were in Costa Rica, that's where he became a certified scuba dive instructor. And we were living in the town. We didn't have a car, so we needed to live somewhere where he could walk to the shop. He could walk to the beach. So we were in the touristy part of town, but we lived back where the locals lived. We didn't live
which town in Costa Rica?
We are in Playa del Coco.
Okay. I've been in Osara. I don't know. Was that near there? Or?
Yeah, not far. It's on the Guanacaste province. So I think Nosara is probably like an hour and a half drive. Not far.
Okay. What was your language skills before taking off on all this? Did you know any Spanish? Growing up in California, you should know some. It's embarrassing that we don't know enough.
I know. And that's the other thing I've discovered as we travel abroad. You know, we've been through South America. Now we're in Asia. And it's embarrassing how many other people speak multiple language. And for us, we're spoiled because English tends to be the kind of unifier. We met a couple where they were a scuba dive couple. The guy was from Australia and the girl was from Germany, but they spoke to each other in English, which is hilarious.
Oh yeah. Well, you'd be in the hostel, you know, right. I would meet people from all over. And that was the way there'd be a Dutch guy next to like an African dude and like a Japanese guy. And what was the one uniform? We were all speaking English.
So, I've
always said that on this show that, you know, Americans, they don't realize just what a great advantage they have.
Speaking
English, because it's just, it's the closest thing to a universal language that there is. And you can always get a guide who speaks English. You can always get a tour in English. You can always get a hotel operator who speaks English. So that ain't the case if you only speak Italian. You know what I mean? So use it, I say. That's what, you know.
Absolutely. And I wish we had English, or we had a foreign language in school, but I don't remember having it until high school, which is so late to think about picking it up. And, you know, now I teach English as a foreign language, and I'm teaching like 5-year-olds. English.
And they pick it up quick,
so crazy. Right? And they pick it up quick. So I did have Spanish in high school. I tell everybody in Spanish that I speak like a 5-year-old. So I have passable every day. I can ask for what we need in a store. I can have a basic conversation. Tell me about your family. If you want to start talking politics. Yeah, if you want to start talking politics and deep philosophical stuff, I'm not your girl.
Well,
but
sure.
if you want to talk about Shakira and you know who has the best gallo pinto, like I can talk about that stuff. So
that's great. That's more than most can do.
Yeah, and I find people appreciate it. Like even if my Spanish is terrible, they appreciate the attempt and they're really patient with me. And so when we were in Costa Rica, I was taking lessons. When we moved to Brazil, I was taking Portuguese lessons because the only country in all of South America that doesn't speak Spanish is Brazil. So I was trying to pick up Portuguese. That is a tough, tough, tough language.
Yeah, it's just just close enough to Spanish to screw you up. You know, just kind of like I would just fall back into Spanish because it's, you know, it's close, but it ain't it. You know what I mean? So wait a minute. Yes. When did Brazil get into the picture?
Yeah. So we've been traveling since 2022. So we spent between 2022. Yeah. We spent 2022 going through South America. So we hit 8 of the 12 countries over the course of 3 years. And so we were doing slow travel through all of the countries. So we did 6 months in Costa Rica, 6 months in Brazil, and then kind of a month here, Argentina, Ecuador. You're going to hate me that we went to the Galapagos.
Why would I hate you?
Because I know that's some place you want to go.
It is. I'm jealous. I don't hate you, but I'm jealous. How did you swing it with? Because that can be pricey. That can put a dent in your budget. How did you work it?
Initially, we sold everything, so we own nothing. Okay. We sold our homes, we sold our cars, we sold everything, and we both work, so that helps. Nobody's going to be rich as a scuba dive instructor or an online English teacher, so we're never going to live luxuriously here, but we make enough to get by, and that's really what we need now, enough to get by.
Is there a tour or something you can recommend in Galapagos that other people can do? Did you like who you went with? What's your advice?
our advice, if you're somebody that doesn't like to plan, I would say a liverboard is a good idea because everything's kind of all encompassed for you. Like your housing is taken care of, your food's taken care of. You're going to see the best dive sites. You're going to get to interact with people all day long. We have not tried a liverboard yet, mainly because of the cost. But my husband is extremely frugal. And so he planned our entire trip himself. And that comes from finding the Airbnb to which dive company has the best rate. So anytime we go anywhere, because I will spend the money for comfort, he knows that I need air conditioning and a king bed. So as long as those two things happen, I'm good.
Shower.
So
you got a private bathroom.
And hot water. And hot water, right. Yes. Which is, I didn't realize you have to ask for, because there's a lot of places that don't have hot water. So yes, hot water.
So you didn't live aboard in the Galapagos?
No, okay. we went to three islands. We did three islands. I think we did like two nights on each island. So we did Cristobal, Isabel, and then I forget the third one. So we did like two or three nights on each one. So we would dive and then rest, dive, rest, dive, rest.
So I heard it's pretty restricted. I mean, in terms of who they let, you know. So in terms of the reef and diving, what shape was it in? I mean, I gotta, because it's so protected, I gotta think the reef's doing pretty good there. What did you see?
Oh my gosh, what didn't we see? Best dives of our lives. Like when people were like, "Where should we dive? Freaking the Galapagos! Like, why is there even a second? Why are you asking me?" we saw hammerheads for the first time. Have never seen hammerheads before. The water is amazingly clear. So we had seals and sea lions kind of just swimming all around us. Saw the gigantic mantas for the first time. We had just gotten into the water and it got really dark. I'm like, gosh, is there a big boat above us? And we look up and it's just like a floating house. And they're so pretty and they love to play in the divers' bubbles. And it just hung around with us. And best dive of my life. No, the manta, the giant manta.
Oh, the manta. Oh, yeah. Those things.
Yeah.
Man.
They're huge. I mean,
they're huge. Gigantic. It's like a king size bed coming.
Yeah.
Speaking of king size bed. Yeah.
Loved it.
That sounds amazing. Get back to Brazil. Where in Brazil were you? Because I was just in Rio during Carnival and that was insane. But
isn't that amazing? We did. We started in a town called Búzios, which is more coastal.
That's the only other town I've been to. I've been to Rio and Búzios.
Yes. Rio and Búzios. So we were in Búzios while he was diving and working. So Búzios was kind of pricey. So we kind of had to temper our activities in Búzios. And Búzios is really touristy. So we didn't really see a ton while we were there. But we met a lot of great people. There that we developed a community, fell in love with Caparinhas and all of that stuff. But we did take some weekend trips out and did Carnival in Rio. Did you download an app? Like, how did you find your parties?
Well, I mean, it was a website that I was following, and then I just went through one of the booking companies. I only had a few nights. So I did do the Samba parade. I had to go there once.
That's awesome.
I went to a couple of the blocos, the block parties and stuff. But again, it was probably, I was by myself. I had just got off a cruise ship working. And then, but it was one of those things like, boy, this would have been a lot more fun in my 20s.
Yes, thank you.
50 something dude, like walking around by myself. And it was like, yeah, I guess. And just hordes of people just partying it all night and just, I mean, even the Samba parade, you go down to it didn't start till like 11 at night. I made it halfway and it was like one, almost two in the morning. And there's still two more to go. This is going on to four in the morning. I was like, I'm done. I'm taking that bus back.
So and we didn't realize that, but Brazil is definitely a young person's game because Brazilians' relationship with time is so strange. Like they kept teasing us. They're like, oh yeah, you Americans eat at 6. We're like, yeah, that's a reasonable hour after work to eat, but they don't eat till like 8, 9, 10 and their nights don't start until whenever. We had made friends with a scuba diving couple And this is the other thing about traveling is everybody's younger than us. So it was her 23rd birthday, which my feelings. Yeah. But they were like, oh, come. It's a Wednesday night. We're going to celebrate her birthday. Come meet us at 2. We're like, okay, we'll see you 2 in the afternoon. They're like, no, no, 2 a.m. Wait, you're starting at 2 a.m.? Okay. So we had to like take a nap. And then go out to their party at 2 a.m. And I think we made it maybe till 5. And we're like, we got to go to bed. We can't hang out with you. So, the Brazilians' relationship with time is something that took a lot of getting used to.
Yeah. It's like that when you go to Spain, you're in Barcelona, and the only people eating dinner at like 6 o'clock are Americans and some Germans walking around, you know. And it's just, I remember I checked into an Airbnb in Buenos Aires. And there was a nightclub at the bottom floor, and I had like some crazy red eye. So I got there at like 8 a.m. and I see people leaving the nightclub. It was like a Sunday morning and people are just leaving at like 8 a.m. I was like, ooh boy, I don't think I'll be going there right now.
Yeah. That was my life in Búzios. Like I'd be going to the gym and people would be coming home. From wherever they were, or the bars would, not the bars, but like they would just be sitting on a patio drinking beer at 8 o'clock in the morning and while I'm going to the gym. So I love the Brazilians, but I can't keep up with them at my old age.
I did a half marathon in Vegas once and it was like, it was that, you know, you start on Sunday morning and literally, you know, Vegas, people are just walking out with a cocktail at 8 a.m. on Sunday and looking at us running down the street. They're like, ooh. And you look at them like, ooh. Exactly. It was just two different Vegas experiences for sure. What? Yep. So since 2020, how many countries has it been?
Oh, gosh. We think we've hit 39 now. So now 39. We are 39. Yeah, we've gotten a lot in. And so now we're in Asia and we just kind of sped through Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam. And we're back in Thailand for kind of a longer extended stay. So some of them we buzz through really quickly. Some of them we do the slow travel where we stay for 6 months.
Okay. So you're in Thailand right now. I thought you were in Vietnam.
Yes.
Where?
I think when we originally talked, I was in Vietnam. We got to Thailand maybe 4 days ago.
Oh, okay. That's why I thought I was losing my mind there for a second. Where in Vietnam were you and where in Thailand are you?
We were all around Vietnam. We started from the top and went down. So we started in Hanoi and then made it down to Ho Chi Minh.
Oh, okay. Great.
And now we're in Phuket.
Oh, okay. Phuket, I mean, if you want to get away from tourists, that ain't the place.
we're outside of Phuket. We're in a town called Chha Long. But again, as a scuba diver, that's where the work is. So we're not in Phuket Central. We're not in Patong. We're in a smaller town called Chha Long.
Okay. I've been to Koh Samui. I mean, I think you did some diving there.
We did.
Okay. So in terms of diving in Asia, I know I've been to Gili Trawangan, which sounds like you went too. And then in the Philippines, I did a little bit. And then in Vietnam, I think I went in Da Nang maybe. Or Nha Trang, okay. one of those. I mean, how's it going for you there? And what's the top spot you think? I mean, nothing's going to match the Galapagos, but in Asia, what's number one for you in Asia right now?
And we haven't hit the Philippines yet, so I can't even begin to compare. It's just ending rainy season now. So things are picking up and the water's getting warmer. We're actually diving tomorrow. So I'll have a better report for you then. But I like here compared to Brazil, the water was so stinking cold. I don't know if you dove there, but it was like 60 degrees. It was so cold. Like I had on a wetsuit and a hood and I could not make more than one dive in Brazil. So I'm excited to be back to warm water diving.
Did you get up? Oh, well, I think Brazil, you got to go up farther north to the, you know, Bahia and all that, you know, that part, which I've never been, unless you want to dive in the Amazon, which that's a different kind. I don't know what the visibility is like in there, but probably not good. piranha and everything.
And the piranha, yeah. We did a tour. I think we stayed overnight for a couple of days in the Amazon rainforest. And was like, no, A, the water's brown, and B, oh yeah, the guys are fishing and catching piranhas for dinner. So no, we're not going to dive in that.
How far into this trip did you decide that you were going to make a website out of this or go viral with this and get a page and like Instagram and just have people follow along? And what was the plan? I mean, did you just want to like share this with family, or did it grow into something else? Or was it always, nope, this is going to be our thing now?
No, initially it was really just to keep our families updated, just so they knew we were alive and, you know, we hadn't been carted off, because for some reason there's these fears, especially when we were in Colombia, that we were going to be in imminent danger. When we were in Medellin, right, Everybody was so scared of us. It's like the nicest people in the world live in Medellin. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. So, initially was to keep people informed. And then just we realized we're kind of in a weird spot. You know, we're not the young people traveling. We're not also not the retirees. We're in that weird middle spot where we're still kind of working on our careers. We're still developing what our second career looks like. And there's other people in the world that kind of look like us, and not look like us identically because we're an interracial American couple. But what does somebody who kind of want to do what we do, what advice would we have for them? So that was really the goal was, hey, if you're thinking about it, it can be done. And this is how we've done it. And if you've got questions, we're here to be a resource. So I think it was intended to be more informational initially. And then as, you know, my very type A husband learned about video editing and technology and equipment and buying this GoPro and downloading this program, it turned into this whole other thing with videos and let's try to monetize it and let's have a YouTube page. And I was like, all right, cool.
It's a lot to carry around. I think I worked in television for a long time, and then people are saying, Mike, you got to do much more of a video element in YouTube and get this, you know, and post all the time. And I'm really bad at it. One of the reasons is I don't want to lug all that shit around. I'm tired, man. And I also don't want to go to a place where I like to kind of be in the moment and kind of enjoy it. And then I don't want to have to think, it's like, I got to shoot B-roll. I got to get like back, you know, background stuff. We got to shoot everything. And just like, sometimes I don't want to pull the phone out, you know?
Yes.
I just want to live in it. Were you struggling with it, or are you getting used to it now?
I think, and I'm with you in terms of equipment, because we're already traveling with scuba dive gear. And so beyond just lugging it around is the expense of having suitcases that's just heavy scuba dive equipment. Checking baggage. And so on top of that, to then get all of this state-of-the-art video equipment, we're not there yet. We're making do with what we've got. So we're budget content creators at this point. You know, if we get to the point where we don't even have microphones, so a lot of our audio is like, we're building it, and that's who we're for. We want people to have the information that don't necessarily need to do this at a professional level. You don't need to have the $3,000 camera equipment or the $3,000 mics or the DJI drones to do what you do. So use what you have, start where you are, use what you have, do what you can. That's kind of how we're approaching it right now.
Well, I'm talking to a lot of more Americans abroad these days, and a lot of people, you know, looking to, you know, get a second visa or something and live abroad. Running into visa and work issues, has there been one country that was really kind of difficult that made it difficult for you, or was it you're there for such a short period of time you don't run into visa problems?
That's somewhat intentional that we're not. I think our goal is to see the world and then find our spot. We're kind of that Goldilocks where we're like, this one's too hard, this one's too soft. And so the goal is to find that place that has everything that we both want. And we haven't found that yet. And so I think when we find that place in the world, then we'll think about settling long term there. So we haven't found it. The closest we've come so far is Colombia. But we want to see the rest of the world to see maybe if Colombia is kind of the standard that we're matching everything else against.
It's in the lead. But you were in Medellin. I've been to Medellin and Cartagena. Were you in one of those places, or because, you know, not a lot of scuba in Medellin?
No.
You're inland there. You're up in the mountains there.
No, we were staying in Santa Marta, which is along the coast.
Okay, good. Hot though, hot there at the coast.
Hot. But the diving is great. It's really inexpensive. Speaking Spanish made connecting to community a lot easier. There's a lot of people moving there, so you're finding a lot of expat groups that are cropping up. And for me, teaching English, plenty of opportunities to do that. For him to dive, so it has everything that we both needed. But we didn't want to be like, oh, we're done. You know, right. There's probably somewhere else in the world that might be great, but that's our gold standard right now.
I've also heard that in terms of if you want to learn Spanish, the Colombian accent is a good one to learn from. Like, it's pretty kind of like a standard, because, you know, everybody will say, oh, Puerto Ricans speak too fast. Cubans speak really fast. You know, Mexicans use too much slang. You know, that, you know, Argentina, that's crazy Spanish, and Chile, that's all nuts down there. But they say Colombia is a pretty good one to learn from. It's like kind of a standard. Did you find that dialect, you know, easier?
Yeah, I think so. I think that my best example of all of this is that everybody, it's kind of like English. Like, all people still have their own way of saying and doing things. I now know like 7 different ways to say straw, because what the word for straw that they use in Colombia is very different than the word for straw that they use in even Mexico City or in Paraguay or in Ecuador. Like, I thought I was, you know, really cool at a restaurant asking for a popote, but that doesn't mean the same thing in Ecuador as it does in Colombia. So there's still some differences, and hand gestures help a lot when you're trying to figure out communication.
Did you go to Paraguay? Were you there?
We did. It was a brief trip there. It wasn't our favorite place. We just did a quick weekend. We wanted to go to see the Iguazu Falls.
Went from that side. I saw Iguazu from the Argentina side. I saw it from the Argentina side, I remember, I think.
We ended up doing both. We did. When we got to Argentina, we did see it from that side as well, the Argentina side is better.
In Paraguay, I've only talked to, like, in all these years, one person that was, you know, living. He was actually living in Paraguay. He was an American dude. He went there, and it was just very odd that he was the only person I met who was like, it's not really big on the travel trail, and it's landlocked and poor. So it's you got to want to go. You know what I mean? You really got to want to go. But there a place? Go ahead.
Certainly visit. Certainly visit if it's on your list and you want to get it done. I don't think you need to spend a lot of time there. It's something that if you're trying to check off stuff, go see it. It's lovely. But to your point, the economy there, I felt that a lot. And it was a little uncomfortable. And there was not much we could do in terms of being travelers to impact that. And so we left. We didn't sit very long.
What about a place that you went and just you didn't feel it? You just didn't feel the vibe, other than Paraguay. Now that was there a place that you stayed, like, you know, we're going to stay here a couple months, and then after about a few weeks, you were like, we might want to move on. Was there a place like that?
We just left on this trip. We went to Laos.
Okay.
Laos is a beautiful, beautiful country. We stayed in Long Prabang. Yes. So the UNESCO World Heritage Site, beautiful place. But then when you get to some of the smaller places like Don Det, it's just kind of like,
yeah.
Okay. So beautiful to visit, but not any place that we would stay long term. And Laos, I loved as a country. I think for us, getting to see the history was really important, stuff that we hadn't even considered, like with the whole how Laos was impacted by the Vietnam War and how heavily bombed they were. Like, we had no idea. This is stuff we don't learn in history books. So to be able to go there and see that even now in 2025, they're still dealing with undetonated bombs and having to clear that. And that's a reality of their lives. And so glad that we were exposed to it. The people are insanely nice. I don't know if I could live there long term. Again, there was nowhere for us to scuba dive. But the people were amazing and the history is there, but I don't think I could see myself living there long term.
Was there a country that really blew you away? Like you weren't expecting to like it as much. You were like, hey, this really, you know, surprised us.
After Colombia, I would say Vietnam was amazing.
Right?
I really,
cool,
really liked
right?
it. I had no idea. I have a friend of mine from high school lives there. And so he's a principal at an international school. And so he's been there with his family for about 5 years now. And so we met up with him and he showed us around. And to see that balance between history and culture and modern, and we happened to be there during their national day, so it not their independence day, which I kept mixing it up, but when they were in their independence from France, and it was this huge parade in Hanoi, and to see the military's march in precision and just to see how proud the country was. Like, I was like, you guys make 4th of July look boring. This is amazing. Just getting to be there with such pride in the country. And I, the sad thing about being in Asia is I'm not going to pick up 17 different languages.
And then another place where the unifier is English. You know, I mean, there's always going to be a tour there in English, and they'll always, you know, have the hotel guy will know English. You know, it's just our luck. We're just very lucky. But how was it for you as an African-American woman going through like Asia and places like this? Probably not a big deal in Brazil, but maybe in Asia, you're going to stand out a little more. Any weird looks, any kind of weird reaction or anything like that?
I love you so much for asking that question. That is a fantastic question. I think for in South America, I think because there's such a strong Afro-Caribbean culture that everywhere I was, somebody thought I was there. So when we were in Costa Rica, they're like, oh, you're Afro-Costa Rican.
Right.
When I was in Brazil, they were like, oh, you're Afro-Brazilian. Like, I didn't have to talk. They just assumed I was one of them. So that was nice getting to see. So no, I wasn't unusual. I didn't stand out. I could always find some place to get my hair done, which was amazing.
And your nails.
And my nails. Thank you. That's never a hard thing. But in Indonesia, I guess President Obama lived there briefly when he was a kid. And so they love him in Indonesia.
Oh, wow.
So that was my experience, was everywhere I went, somebody would be like, Obama. And I thought that was adorable. A lot of people wanted to take my picture, which I thought, well, do I look like a celebrity that they're confusing me with? I didn't know. And so we finally got to talk to somebody who spoke English. And he's like, no, just in the smaller places that are not Bali, we don't get a lot of tourists over here. And so we see American culture on TV. We see Black people on TV, but we don't get to interact with them. And we learn English, but we're learning from each other. So the opportunity to practice with another English speaker is great for us. So Indonesia was great. So people took my picture. I got used to it. It wasn't weird. Nobody tried to touch my hair or anything. So that was fine.
I had that in Hanoi. Speaking of Vietnam, I mean, I was just park in Hanoi, and then somebody, this girl comes up to me and wanted to know if she could take a picture with me. And I was like, okay. And once everybody else saw that I was cool with it, they just started coming out of the woodwork one after another. And I'm just posing with this guy like, hey, what are they going to do with the photo? Just tell people that's, hey, this is my white buddy. Look at him.
I have a white friend.
Here we are in the park. You know, but so yeah, it was strange for sure. But
yeah,
they just don't get a chance to interact, I guess, that much. I mean, it was harmless, thank God, you know, but and you know, Vietnam has a, if they want to have a beef with us, you know, they have the right, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I was just happy I was being treated nicely. And then
go ahead, finish.
No, and then I would go see the Hanoi Hilton, and then, oh God, and then I have to hear about the war and the Agent Orange and the, like, ooh, Now, yes, I'll keep a low profile here.
But a lot of apologizing. Really nice to you? Were they really nice to you? I felt like people were super nice to me. And I had the same feeling. I had the same feeling about guilt, especially after going to Laos and seeing the bombing. And then the same thing with Cambodia and seeing the bombing. That's just the U.S. Like, we were the only people bombing them. But people are super sweet about it. And I think they understand that this is not us. It wasn't the two of us that caused this. And so they're very sweet and they're really open to sharing their histories. And we went on a tour of the tunnels.
Oh, the Coochie Tunnels outside of Saigon.
And the families were really nice to us. It's insane. It's so crazy that this happened for years. Like, just think about the amount of time all of this happened. And it wasn't that long ago. Like, this ended in, what, 75? I was born in 75. Well, that wasn't that long ago.
Well, it was weird. When I was there and you see the old guys walking around, I was like, oh, these guys were in it. I mean, they were the ones in it. And it was like, okay, if they got a problem with me, I'll totally understand.
But they didn't. Thank God, which is nice.
So after Asia, and I don't know how long you're planning on staying over there, is there a next continent on your list? I mean, are you going to try to do Europe? Or are you going to go to Africa? I mean, what do you think?
I definitely want to do Africa for sure. In my lifetime, we're going to have to hit Africa. I need to see Kenya. I need to see the wild animals. Since we're close to Australia, I think Australia's next. We got to see the Great Barrier Reef before the coral.
Oh, that's right.
Reef is not there anymore. That's true. So, definitely going to take a trip down to Australia. And then, we've done a little bit of Europe. We did a short, how long were we in Europe? We were there for a month and hit maybe six countries really quickly. It's cold. So I don't really enjoy being cold. There's some diving in Spain, so we might hit Spain. So definitely Australia. We just got here after kind of a whirlwind, so we're settling down and just kind of kicking back and relaxing before we plan our next big thing. But definitely Australia, probably Spain. Sure, because we've got friends there that own a dive shop. So,
oh, perfect.
Definitely do some diving in Spain.
Where in Spain?
It begins with an S, I think. I will get back to you on that. But their dive center is called Manga, MANGA Dive Center.
Okay. What is there like an average length of time you say you would spend in each place? Is it usually about a month? Is it about, say, 3 weeks? I mean, what's your go-to? 3 months?
If it's someplace where he's working, we'll do 6 months to give us that time for him to build up work experience and the time. It's usually high season. So we'll do 6 months someplace if he's working. If it's someplace where we're just kind of traveling, where we want to hit as much of the country as we can, we typically will do a month someplace just so that we have a home base. Because to your point, we've got a ton of luggage. And to travel with a ton of luggage is not fun. And so we find a home base where we can leave our stuff safely and then maybe do a week here, a week there, whatever, but have a home base in one place.
Okay. What about like in terms of crime or anything like that? Give us any stories come to mind? Anything, any good travel tales about ever get, you know, your luggage just suddenly walk away or pickpocketed? Anything?
No, I feel like part of that I don't know if that's a young person's thing. We don't, what do they call it in Colombia? They said, don't show your papaya. And what that means is, you know, if you don't be walking around with a 6-carat engagement ring and don't walk around with an iPhone 17 and don't have cash falling out of your pocket. Like we live very minimally. So we don't have, you know, we're not out. We're old, so we're not out till 5 o'clock in the morning drunk, you know? Right. So I don't think we put ourselves in situations where we would be in danger. I would say the closest we've come to crime, it was more of a misunderstanding than a crime. The closest we came was in Colombia, in Santa Marta. There's not really an organized way to find housing. So they said, oh, just go to a building, talk to the front desk and ask them if there's any vacancies. Okay. So we went to this apartment and it had a front door guy and we're like, hey, is there any vacancies? And they said, oh yeah, the folks in 304 are vacant. go up and talk to them. So we went up and talked to them. They were a much older couple, Colombian couple, had no English. We were just doing our translator app with them and came up with a fee. We left the deposit. We told them some stuff we needed for the apartment, like internet. We needed a bigger bed. They're like, oh yeah, we have a bigger bed on our farm, on our finca. We'll bring you the bigger bed. So we had all of this stuff worked out. Everything was great. But they kept asking us for money. Like, we need this to move the bed from the finca. We need this money for this. And we were staying at a co-living space. And I had asked the owner, like, hey, do you mind just kind of having a conversation with, we don't know what's going on. Do you mind talking? Which is the other piece of travel that's been amazing, is the kindness of people is unmatched. People are go above and beyond constantly for us, which is amazing. And so had a conversation with them, and they had already spent the money that we gave them for the deposit. And we just decided, you know what, we're going to back out of this deal. And they're like, no, no, it's fine. We'll have everything ready, because we were supposed to move in the next day. And we're like, no, it's fine. Like, clearly you need this money more than we do. We'll find something else. So it wasn't a crime. I think it was just two old people that did not know what they were doing and had not officially rented this place. And an opportunity popped up in front of them and they were trying to figure it out. Wow. That's the closest that we've come to crime. But I think it was just more of a misunderstanding than anything else. But no, we haven't had
no
any
problems,
issues.
No border crossings, nothing with immigration or anything like that. That's good.
No, we're very good about if you say we can be here for 60 days, we leave on day 59 and leave and get that stamp. Like, I'm not going to end up in a jail somewhere. I don't have parents bail me out. So
right.
No, we're very good about paying attention to visas and laws. And oh, I guess we were in another part of Thailand and we were driving a motorcycle, but we didn't know that you needed a international driving permit. And we got pulled over like 2 seconds after we were on the motorcycle. And they're like, no, you need a permit to drive this. Okay, great. But they gave us a ticket and they said, well, this ticket is good for 3 days. So the next time you get pulled over in the next 3 days, show them this ticket, but take care of it with the traffic police in 3 days, pay the fine, and then get the driver's permit. All right, cool. So
okay. What are you doing for about healthcare or insurance? And have you ever had to go to a hospital in another country or do something? What happened?
Oh, goodness gracious. Great balls of fire. How much time do you have? we got some time. We're paying for, we've got insurance through scuba dive insurance. So Dan is a Divers Action Network. So in addition to scuba diving insurance, we've got health insurance through them and travel insurance through Dan. So that's our primary insurance. Otherwise, we pay for stuff out of pocket. You know, we get our teeth cleaned. That's $25. So mostly we're paying for things out of pocket. What happened recently was your girl realized that she needed spine surgery.
What?
And so, yeah, I got to the point where I was losing feeling in my leg and I couldn't walk and I was walking on crutches. And because I'm also stubborn, we did the 4-day Inca Trail in Machu Picchu, even though I was in extreme pain, but I was like, I'm going to finish this. And then after that, I was like, no, I should probably see a doctor. And it turned out I needed spine surgery. And so I had spine surgery in Bangkok in June.
Wow.
And so all of that was out of pocket, but it was for the same surgery in the States would have cost me 5 times as much.
Right.
So
just to make people angry here, out of pocket, what is was it like they had to, like work on a disc or what's the surgery?
Yeah. Okay, my disc between my S5L1 was degenerated, so the lower part of my back. So that disc was degenerated, and then my spine was also misaligned, and it was the misalignment that was causing the pain in my leg. So I had to get it realigned. I had a artificial disc put in, and now I have a titanium cage in the lower part of my back just to support my spine. So yeah, not a small surgery. I know I have to carry a card now for when I go through metal detectors in the
X-rays?
Airport so they know
you
what
set
it is
off?
Yes.
Oh wow, okay.
But you know, okay. Oddly, no, my bra sets it off, but not my not my surgery.
But the you don't have to say the number, but give us a range and make us all angry here in the States what this cost you out of pocket.
It was a low five figures.
A low five figures. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Between 10 and 20,000.
Yes. Yes.
And here it would have been 100 or more.
Yes. Yes. If my insurance covered it, and the amount of paperwork and approvals and the amount of time it would have taken me to get done in the States would have been insane. Like, we called the hospital, Bumrungrad Grad International Hospital in Bangkok is amazing. I think we called the doctor on Thursday, had the x-rays done the next day. And then I had surgery a week later. Do you know, within 2 weeks, I had diagnosis, x-rays, everything done, and the surgery. I was in the hospital for 2 days. I walked out of the hospital. We were actually in Bangkok before we came here for a follow-up appointment with my doctor. And so can you imagine how long all of that would have taken? I would have had to go to the 18 different specialists, and I had to argue with the insurance company over which doctor to see. And so it was an amazing experience. And I think when people are nervous about, you know, my family is like, oh, you're in a third world country, you're having spine surgery in a third world country. It's like, there's valet at my hospital. There's Maseratis in this hospital. Like, what are you talking about?
Most of those doctors went to school here. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of them went to school here, and then they went back for whatever reason. A lot of them, like, they worked here for a while and didn't really, you know, there's a lot of how they didn't want to deal with insurance companies. They didn't want to deal with malpractice insurance. They racked up huge debts. And they're just like, I've talked to a couple of people on here. I talked to a woman who got two artificial hips put in India, but it was cheaper for her to fly there, get it done. They put her up for like a week in like a 5-star resort. She had like her own private nurse, and she never would have been able to afford it here. So no. Medical tourism is a major, major thing around the world. I had a friend in Asia. Yeah. His dentist is in Bangkok, and that's where he gets all his work done. Yeah. So you're lucky you were in a big city, though.
We traveled there. Like, we did a lot of research on him and found him. And he's one of those doctors he travels once a month internationally to train other doctors to do the procedures, because he's a spine specialist.
Oh,
and
great.
So he trains other doctors all over the world to do what he does. And so I'm like, yeah, I mean, if he's
good
trusted. Yeah, I love him. I can't pronounce his name, but I love him.
Are you all better
he changed
now?
My life. I'm all better now. I had the surgery in June. I've been walking. I lost 17 pounds just because now I'm mobile. I can move. I have a very different approach to working out now. I work out now because I can, not because I'm punishing my body or I hate my body or because I'm chubby. Like, I'm working out because I can. And I love that. It's a totally different approach. Like, as soon as we're done, I'm going to the gym because I want to, because I can, because my parents, who are no longer with us and had health issues. And I actually, the issue that I have with my spine is the same thing my dad had. So I inherited this.
Oh.
And at the end of his life, he couldn't walk. He had had surgery after surgery after surgery and still couldn't walk and died in pain. And so me being able to do that is a privilege. So I'm going to take advantage of my health while I have it. So
yeah,
I'm so grateful. So grateful.
Until you lose it, you never take it for granted. Once you lose it, you take it for granted again. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah. So that's great. What a good story. So what, after this, do you have, I mean, you said Australia, do you have a goal for like the website, for the, is Instagram your main thing, or are YouTube people, or are you TikTokers? I don't know. What are the kids doing now? What are the 50-year-old kids doing?
I know, and I'm so terrible at it. I do the social media piece, and I think that's the other thing about traveling, slow traveling long-term as a couple, is you find your strengths and you stick with it. And so things like this, I'm the chatty one. And so he's the behind the scenes person. So I manage kind of the outward facing pieces of our organization. So I do the social media piece. I do the TikToks. I do all of the commenting on YouTube and all of that, where he's behind the scenes, he's doing the editing and putting everything together and coming up with a plan. So
good for you. You traveling around with your own cameraman.
I know. I love it.
You got a crew. And it, a crew with you.
I know. So it's great. So I think for me, it's kind of together. It's to build this business and hopefully help people that want to do what we do. Personally, it's just continuing to do the things that I love, to focus on my health, to do the things that I can do now that I'm not chasing a title like I was in my career. I'm not chasing a title anymore. I'm not chasing a salary. I'm not on that rat race. So now I get to do the things that I just like to do. I like teaching children. I like doing my podcast. I like writing freelance. So I just get to do what I want to do that I love. And occasionally people pay me for it and that works out. So that's what I see as the rest of my life.
Are you getting more, sponsorships and things like some people? I mean, are you being asked to review things or what's happening? When you say you're monetizing,
We want to. We're still working on that piece. And I think listening to your guest is really helpful. I think listening to Justin was really helpful. And so we're in a lot of the research phase now. I think that we're fighting against the algorithm, or rather he's fighting against the algorithm. I'm just like, let's put out content. The people that need to find it will find it. So that's where we are. It's a balance of we're building as much as we can, and the right people will find us. And it's just a matter of being in places where we love. Because I think to your point you said earlier, at some point when you start doing it just for the content, it stops being fun. It stops being authentic and it stops being us. So we just do us, and the people that benefit from what we do will find us. And if not, we just scuba dive and hang out and we put out what we put out and we live our lives and we live healthy and we love each other and we get to see the world. And so right now that's enough.
That's perfect. Did your friends and family come around? Did they think you were crazy at first? And now they're like, you know what? She's making it work.
No, they still think we're crazy. especially when I'm having surgery and they're like, wait, what? You're climbing Machu Picchu. You can't walk. No, I think it's the realization that life looks differently. I think it's that whole, like, what about your pension? And you don't own a house and, you know, we don't have kids. So who's going to take care of you when you get sick and all of that stuff. So I think it's those fears that they've kind of put on us, not necessarily from a place of you guys are idiots, but from a place of care. And we have to remember that when they put those fears on us, it's because they care. And so all we can do is let them know that we're okay. And we keep in touch with everybody. And we go home, we go back to the States. We try to go back once a year. It's a little harder now that we're in Asia. It's a long, long flight to go back. It's a super long one. We were just back there in February to see my brother has his first daughter. She's two now. Oh. And so we went to see it. She's so stinking cute. She's so stinking cute. So we went to see her and see Scott's family in Oregon and have some Tillamook cheese.
Yeah, I bet. Boy, he's got to get so tired of answering cheese questions. That's got to
No. Surprisingly, no. He could talk about cheese all day long. Oh, loves his cheese. We were in, we were on a train in Peru, taking a train from, I think we were going from Cusco to someplace with a P, I can't remember. And on the train, the guy sitting across from us was eating Tillamook beef jerky. And so they became besties on the train. They talked for like 2 hours.
That's funny.
So no, he never gets sick of talking about Tillamook.
Okay, Jen, get your plugs in now. Tell people where they can find you. The name the name of your sites and where can they see what you're doing?
You can find us everywhere at jns.adventures. So that's our name on TikTok, on Instagram, and on YouTube. So wherever you want to find us, that's where we are. I think I posted my post today on Instagram was about 5 songs you're definitely going to hear from cover bands in Thailand. So some of them are just funny, and some of them are like, hey, here's how we make it through the day. So we've got a little mix of everything for anybody that's looking for it.
Oh, now I'm going to have to guess the five songs, because having been to Thailand enough. The ones you hear all the time at karaoke. Okay. Something by the Eagles. Desperado is or Hotel California. I heard Desperado more than anything. This is a while ago, but...
I'll have to adjust that. So not karaoke, although there's a huge karaoke community here in Asia. We're not there to listen to people sing badly. But
so what do you hear in the bar?
Cover bands.
Oh, cover bands. Okay.
Yes.
We're talking rock, more hip hop. What are we talking?
More rock, because they're usually live.
Okay. So I'm going to go with, let's see, something from U2. Something in there? No?
Surprisingly, no. No, that's a good guess, though.
Rolling Stones, something from that. It's going to be Beatles songs. There's going to be Beatles songs in there,
definitely,
right?
Beatles songs. Yeah, definitely Beatles songs. They love them.
Yesterday, which is it? Yesterday.
Yes.
Which
ones are they? Yesterday.
Is that on the list? Damn
yesterday,
right.
Yes.
It is. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I heard Jumpy Jack Flash the other day too.
Okay, there's Stones represented. boy. No Eagles, all huh? Right, I figured.
No,
just give it
not,
to me.
Not regularly. So, surprisingly, we hear a lot of Creep from Oasis all the time.
Oh, Creep from Radiohead.
Yeah. Is it Radiohead? Ooh, it's I got to redo that post. Oh shoot, I got to redo that post.
Yeah, I don't mean to correct you. I just saw Oasis.
No, correct me. That's fine.
2 weeks ago. No, Creep's Radiohead.
Oh, whoops. All right. Let me redo that post. So, yeah, Creep, Adele, Rolling in the Deep.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay.
Amy Winehouse, Valerie, a lot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Michael Jackson, Billie Jean.
Yep.
And then Daft Punk, for some reason, that Lucky song.
Oh, yeah.
She's up all night to get
lucky. All night to get lucky. Yeah, sure.
Yes.
Boy, it's like you're on a cruise ship. It's like you're on a cruise ship. It really is.
A little bit.
That's funny.
A little bit.
Okay. That's a good list. I like it. Yeah, but don't let the Radiohead people read that. You're gonna
know.
I don't want to see your inbox now. That's gonna be it's gonna be flooded with those guys. Okay, finally, what do you think all this travel and what you've seen around the world? What has it taught you about, you know, life and yourself, and how has it changed you?
I think what it has taught me, which is an awesome question to ask, is just that we're not that different from each other. As much as we like to think that our way is the best and we know the best way to do things, I think that seeing how other people live and that they can live with less and still be happy is interesting. And at the end of the day, we're not that different from each other. People want to be seen. They want to be heard. They want to live comfortably. They want their families to be taken care of. They want to prosper. And it's not that wildly different from country to country. And I think it's just a matter of sitting down and talking to people and getting to know them and hearing their stories. And that to me has been the best part of all this. Like, even if you're just sitting down and talking to a kid, like their curiosity is off the chain as small children, and they don't know about filters. So they'll ask me all kinds of weird questions, but it's from a pure place of curiosity. And I love that. I love that so much.
That's awesome. Well, Jen, I appreciate you reaching out, and thank you for getting up early in Thailand there. What time is it there now?
We're probably, it's only 9, so it's not too bad.
9 in the morning, and I'm here at 7 at night. Oh, boy.
Not too bad.
The magic of technology. But thank you
thank
so
you
much.
Thank you for making the time. Thank you for having this podcast. I think that's the other thing about slow travel is we have a lot of time on planes and in the gym. And when you're able to find a podcast that kind of connects with your passions and you have a host that is saying the things that you resonate with and somebody who's in your generation, it's a great, great opportunity. So thank you for the work that you do. And thank you for having me.
Well, that's very nice of you. And I'm only 29, of course, you know, I have to say that, you know, I'm still in Hollywood here. Let's be honest, but thank you very much. And, please travel safe. Keep that spine straight.
Thank you. I know. Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Bye. You're so good at this.
Thank you.
For spontaneous travelers, winging it is the perfect listen. James Hammond shares stories and tips from 75 plus countries. Find it at voyescape.com.